once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And it is sort of exciting. The booby trap's in here because we've been gone for a couple of weeks. We're thicker than usual.
Yes, the microphone had a very distinct sag to it. There's these large arms that hold the microphones up to our faces so that we may speak into them. And old Baldy across from me, Jeff, had his microphone pulled out, and it just went like a
first the microphone on the end of the arm promptly flopped to the pointing straight down position.
the arm that holds it up flopped straight down. It's just
so I anyone who knows me knows that other than while riding on airplanes, I always have a Leatherman on my belt. Thank God I had it on there because I was immediately able to take out the tools and begin to adjust the tensioning on the microphone arm. This is all going on while we were setting up computers. This is an exciting. That's how I
didn't have duct tape with me. That would have completed the picture. We're just duct taping everything in the studio to hold it up and put some fishing wire from the ceiling to hold the microphone off the ground, you know. Good stuff. Anyway, this is The Personal Wealth Coach, also known as an engineering firm that helps to make radio programs good. No, we're not that at all. We are. We are also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm that does business out of Salado, Texas.
We do?
I believe so.
Okay. If you say so.
I do. I think.
Well, right now we are out of Salado, Texas, but normally
we are
do,
out of Salado,
actually,
Texas.
We do business in Salado,
it's
Texas.
True. But out of
isn't
while
it,
in.
Isn't English a wonderful language where slim chance and fat chance mean the same
it's
thing?
Exactly
and
in, the same.
In yeah. Salado and out of Salado mean the same thing.
Yes. Well, you can make something fast, which either makes it very slow or makes it very fast.
I love what I asked somebody, I was at a star party recently, a star party for those of you who are not familiar with these critical pieces of information.
Not celebrities.
Is where a bunch of geeks get into a field. In this case, it was about 433 of us. And spend the night outside looking into long tubes. And
do you know what they call that in the younger generations?
What?
Raves.
Raves?
Yes. They stand around shuffling their feet and looking into the sky. That's a rave. Yeah.
Well,
usually there's glow sticks involved and
stuff. We don't shuffle our feet. We actually stand generally or stand or sit quite quietly and very, very still.
Well, you know, that's sometimes that happens at raves too. I
really?
Understand you're in the subculture now. So.
And there's generally very, very dim red lights around us, but other than that. Anyway.
Yes.
Where was I talking about?
That we are you said that you were recently at a star party.
Yeah, but it was another subject before that, and I totally lost what it was I was trying to say at the beginning of that. Anyway, I was going to say something about that. But
You know, memory is the second thing to go.
What'd you say?
We can't remember what the first thing to go
was.
This
is The Personal Wealth Coach, and The Personal Wealth Coach is, this is a disclosure, folks, in case you didn't recognize it. An SEC, which is United States Securities and Exchange Commission, I'm not supposed to use acronyms, registered investment advisory firm that does portfolio management in Salado. It's also the name of this radio program. And
you sure?
Between the two of us, we have about 5,000 years. That is hyperbole.
Yeah, that's a little hyperbole. We have a long time together in the investment world. Let's see. For me, it's 22 years.
We have funny little letters after our names.
30, how many years?
31. Yeah, I guess I am. So I'm up at 31 years now.
Between the two of us, we've got 53 years of experience, which I think they're, if we were talking about a sentence in prison, I don't think they would stack like that.
You can actually serve concurrently.
Oh, so have we been serving concurrently in the investment world?
I'm not at all. But we've been at this a long time. And, you know, why is us being at it for a long time important? Because actually we've made a lot of mistakes along the way, and we've seen a lot of other people make mistakes along the way.
And also, we've collectively been through, what, 3 government shutdowns now?
Well, actually,
maybe a little more than that if
actually,
we go back.
We actually have four.
So four government shutdowns that we've been through. So this is, you know, people talk about this being the...
Because Newt Gingrich shut it down twice in the same year.
That's true. That's true.
Although people would argue that Bill Clinton, but credit goes to Newt Gingrich.
The reality is that it takes a village to shut down Congress. It takes a village to shut down the government. I think that is an appropriate statement.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you have 536, counting the president, people, that's about a village.
Yeah, it's a pretty good-sized village.
But it's not viable.
And not a viable village?
No, there's not enough women. And everybody's too old.
Yeah. If we look at the demographics of our government at the highest level, there are so few women in government that we're probably going to go extinct.
Yeah, and the women are not young.
They're not.
By and large.
Yeah, so this is also another problem with the economy is that statisticians tend to take a limited group of people and make large extrapolations off of it. Just like if this government shutdown continues for the next decade... That I actually heard someone saying something about if the government shutdown continues for the rest of the year.
Well, you know, that was a possibility.
Yeah.
It's a very remote possibility, but it was a possibility, and it was interesting to say the least. Well, in case you didn't notice, now I realize some of you. I seriously doubt there's anyone out there that doesn't realize that we just went through a minor governmental
anyone out
crisis.
There.
Well, that's what I mean.
There's nobody out there, so.
By the way, one of the big questions we always ask is ourselves. At least I ask myself when we start this, is there anyone out there? We haven't given them the telephone number.
No. Well, why would we do
773-1400 is the telephone number in East Bell County if you want to give us a call. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
And
it's been fascinating watching the disorganization of our organized government. It's very easy to put blame on one party or another, particularly if you're a member of the other party. My tendency...
We should start one of those.
My tendency is to put the blame on everybody equally. And I realize that that may sound like a cop-out, but the Senate passed a bill which the House could not support. The House passed a bill that the Senate could not support, and the president didn't really want to support either of the two bills.
Well,
so it's really easy to say one side or the other did this.
I think the Senate bill was supported by the president.
Only after. So this is the second Senate bill that was supported by the president. And this is after they had already been in heated conversations all around. In my opinion, this is like the BART strike taking place in San Francisco right now.
The BART Simpson strike?
Oh, yes, the BART Simpson. The transit.
Yes, I'm
group.
Familiar. I'm familiar with BART.
There are,
Bay Area Rapid Transit.
Yes.
Not
rapid at all transit right now, and no transit. The Bay Area sits still is what they should call it.
Did they get it resolved?
Sort of. It's, you know, the last time around, it took a governor saying, you need a cool-off period, get back to work. 60 days later, which was the length of the cool-off period, they're back at striking. But this time, they didn't really give anybody warning. So 2 hours before rush hour, they said, we're striking. So it's brinksmanship. It's, hey, we're going to create a lot of confusion and panic to help our own negotiations when they're forgetting the reason why they're there. BART, the employees of BART don't get paid if people don't ride the transit system. And I considered something since I had extended
No, they'll get paid.
Yeah, they get
just
paid.
Like
you're
the,
right.
Just like in
it's
Austin.
Governmental.
In Austin, the bus drivers get paid whether anyone's on the bus or not.
That's true. Well, yeah, that's true. While they're on strike, they don't get paid by the
No, they get
BART
paid by themselves.
Yeah, they get paid by the union. The government did the same thing, and I had done my filing my tax extension, and I've already paid all my taxes. I was actually getting a little refund, which is a little bit unusual for me. But I considered just stopping paying my quarterly taxes because, you know, if BART goes on strike, and you don't ride the subway, well, then you don't pay to ride the subway. But when the government goes on strike, we're still required to pay. That seems a little bit like we have a double standard here. I should be able to go on strike on my payment. In my negotiation with the IRS, I should be able to tell them, no, I'm not paying you. No, I go to jail if I do that.
I think there may be a subtle difference there.
Yeah, and when Congress does it, they don't say, we're going to give back a refund for all of our concerned citizens that had been paying taxes while we did nothing. That would be kind of nice.
Well, actually, there was almost some advantage to the government shutdown. But it was reversed.
They didn't get to do anything? I like that.
No. They believe me, they've got a lot of catching up to do now.
Yeah, they've got statistics that's something we'll get to later. Lots of stuff we don't know what's going on anywhere.
The fact that a lot of people didn't get paid took us a long ways towards balancing the budget, reducing the deficit, except that Congress turned around.
First day back in open, $238 billion added to the national debt one day. Because
of back pay.
Back pay. They've been... And back pay
this is the interesting
and
thing. They gave back pay to people who weren't working.
Right. They were on furlough.
Yeah. But, you know...
They got paid leave. Kind of nice.
Well, it's interesting. The statistics, we normally are concerned with... unemployment and labor statistics, whatever comes out, the numbers that have already come out and the ones that have come out in the near future are going to be really, really, really messed up because there were, the numbers are still coming in, but there were a tremendous number of government employees who applied for unemployment benefits quite legitimately. They're going to show up on the numbers
as
the
being
next unemployment,
right?
Nobody knows, by the way, at this point. For this whole month, the numbers are going to be goofy, squirrely.
Not only this whole month, but historically, later in life, when we are looking back at this point in history and we're looking at the data, there will be gaps that will never be filled in.
Mm-hmm.
That data that just was not gathered, so cannot be displayed.
And the other thing is, economists are having a great deal of difficulty trying to figure out exactly how much the government shutdown pulled off of the gross domestic product of the United States.
Because the GDP of the United States is measured by...
the people who were laid off.
It's amazing.
But it looks like anywhere from 0.1% to 0.5% for this year will be gone. Because of the fiscal crisis. And when I say fiscal crisis, apparently one of the major events that occurred that probably won't make the headlines is long term. And that is that a number of surveys that I read this morning, they're listed, there's articles in Wall Street Journal about it. Note that the willingness of business to spend has fallen dramatically, spend and invest,
right,
in the last few weeks. And when asked why, the decision makers are basically saying, we feel very uncertain about what's going to happen next in the economy. And you say, well, okay, that doesn't have anything to do with the government. Well, in this case,
does.
It does have a lot to do with the government, because whether we like it or not, there are a lot of people out there who rely on government checks. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons the recession that we had that began in 2008, went through 2009 very nicely, was relatively mild compared with the Great Depression, was that there's a pretty good sized proportion of America who receives paychecks from the United States government, and thereby they're not subject to being laid off. And you could say, oh, well, those nasty people, and they're not working, but they do spend money.
They're called retirees.
They're called Social Security recipients.
Social Security.
And military retirees. And
civil
service retirees. We have, obviously, if you follow these numbers at all over the years, a much larger percentage of people receiving a living wage from the federal government who are not working today.
Now, you can argue very easily that you paid into the system for your lives and so on, but
well,
and that's a good, it's an argument,
but it's being paid
by the government.
The point is, it's a flow-through system. The government is paying those people. They're not working. That constitutes a stimulus that really does keep us off the bottom, because if you look at the growing number of people in the United States who are drawing Social Security or are pensioners, federal government pensioners, or military retired persons, those people's paychecks continued to come in, and that was a very, very cushioning effect.
Yeah, and now, extremely long-term, the economy can't run on that because it requires taxpayers to pay for it long-term. But for cases like the Great Depression or the Great Recession, it does something that...
Yeah, it can't run on it, but it certainly cushions
it
at the bottom.
Yeah, it pushes us through. It's like having a downhill roll that pushes you up the hill a certain amount.
But it's sort of... And this is the fascinating thing to me. It's forced savings.
Forced savings?
People are reducing their income. People who are working today have their income reduced... What is it, about 7%, 7.5% for Social Security, counting Medicare?
Plus the other side is another 7.4.
Yeah, but I'm talking about just the Medicare, just the Social Security side. It's 6.4.
6.4, something like that.
Or maybe it's 12. I don't know. Anyway, if you throw in the employer. But what we have is a forced, if you will, tithe or thereabouts, savings in the United States, which goes into... Treasury bonds, which then pays back out again later on, and it has a very fascinating, a lot of economists have looked at this, stabilizing effect. And we don't save enough by many standards in the United States, and yet this forced savings seems to have had a positive effect on things. Admittedly, there's some negatives to it that some people don't like.
12.4% total. Okay, 6.2 for
each. So 12.4% of the money, the earned income of people making below $185,000 or something like that, some number, goes into...
below 200.
Is it below 200 now? Social Security goes up?
Well, no, that's the Medicare. Let's see. It's 113,000.
113. Okay. Yeah. Below, anybody, of the money you make below $113,000 a year, earned income, not investment income, then we finally got the numbers. This is the way we get to numbers, by the way, folks.
Yes.
This is the intensive, rigorous research that we're doing. 6.2% plus 6.2%, so 12.4, is that it?
12.4.
12.4% of your money.
If you're self-employed, you don't have it split.
You loan to the federal government, and then they pay you back at the end. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, Rick in Salado.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, now, you guys in the past, I think your dad pretty much talked about the Reagan years, right, as being a post-Jimmy Carter, inflationary depression or whatever you want to call it, but that he pumped money into the Department of Defense.
We came out of a recession there because we pumped money into the Department of Defense.
He basically did a form of
kind of like World War II.
Stimulus by revving up the military rather dramatically, right?
Winning the Cold War.
Wasn't it in the past you drew a parallel how the left, which is what we're in right now, the left is in power, did a stimulus on the other side of the fence that's sort of like non-defense investments, right?
Is that
correct?
No, no, that wouldn't be.
What time are you talking about? What time period?
Well, it's from then until now. The pendulum has swung in two directions. That's Reagan tried to stimulate the economy through military means.
I don't think that's why he was doing it.
Spending. Well,
he wasn't doing it to stimulate the economy.
It worked that way. It worked
too,
out that
I
way.
Understand. But, it had unintended consequences or intended consequences.
He went out and he did what he did, and it happened, and
whether it was intended or not,
I mean, the objective was to run the Soviet Union broke.
And that worked.
And then after that, the budget issues, when the boom that hit the tech boom. But another aspect of that was that because we were able to cut defense spending probably a little too far under after the Soviet Union collapsed when Bill Clinton was president, then we actually wound up with a surplus.
Yeah, and that and the Resolution Trust Corporation during that savings and loan issue where the savings and loan went broke all across the nation. The Resolution Trust Corporation, which was a bipartisan deal, but it was under a Republican administration, came in and bought up all these properties. Well, the profits from those purchases went to the federal government, and they really came in the Clinton years. So we had this big surplus.
Well, Mike, what I wanted to do is just at the end of my point is that you draw a sort of like a bizarro world. We're at the opposite now.
No, we're not.
Agree? Are we not doing opposite of what Reagan did?
No, we're doing.
No.
No, not at all. Let me explain something. When you say that we're
like,
wait a minute, hang on, listen.
All right.
Okay. You said that the left is in power now. Let me explain something.
Are they not?
They're not. let me put something in perspective here. Okay.
All right.
If the current American administration were in power in any other developed nation or area of the world, they would be far to the right of the most right-wing party that exists.
You mean we could go even further left?
Oh, yeah.
Aren't left.
Just look at anywhere else in the world. Europe, if you look at Russia, and Russia is moving in many ways further left, which makes it look almost like it's right.
Well, let me explain something. The when I ask people what are the differences between the Bush administration and the Obama administration as far as policy is concerned, they can only give me one answer.
Obamacare.
Well, let me tell you, Obamacare
prescription drug benefit.
Obamacare sets up marketplaces where companies can compete to offer health insurance.
It sounds a lot like George W.'s attempt at privatizing parts of Social Security.
In other words, instead of offering a government-run system like Medicare is, he came out with a free market system. The only thing that the government demands is that you get health insurance.
Yeah, and if you look closely at it, the places where it's privatizing, the places that were covered by state-run insurance programs are now being run by private insurance companies. So we took a public entity and privatized it during a left administration.
And there's another aspect to this that just reeks, in Jeff McClure's opinion, of irony. And that is,
I wondered what that smell was.
That instead of corporations dictating your health coverage, a number of major corporations and a number of others have stated they're going to do it as soon as they can, are going to provide a voucher for the amount of money they're paying now for their employees, hand the voucher to whatever company the employee chooses to get their health coverage from. So what we've done is taken what is in essence a socialist sort of system and moved it way to the right to a more free market system.
Now, we did that on a large scale, which made a bigger government program. So if we did something that was right-leaning by making it a bigger government program, what we see from that, the balance of it, is a center government.
And this is, by the way, a fascinating thing that you mentioned, Reagan. Do you know who first came up with the idea of the state marketplaces and universal health insurance done that way?
Ronald Reagan.
And you know who implemented it in a state for the first time?
Mitt Romney.
So this is, when you say this is the opposite of Reaganism, no.
Wait, no.
And this is, let me throw one other thing in here.
Perception.
Let me tell you something that's really fascinating, and this is the truth about presidents, period, throughout history. Under George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan, I'll just use those two as examples, the federal government grew phenomenally. It became more intrusive, it became larger, and it became more bureaucratic. Now, this is where you're going to think I've lost my mind, but listen a second. Since President Obama has been in office, the shrinkage in the federal government has been equally phenomenal. It's not as shrunk as much as George W. Bush. George W. Bush made a whole new cabinet department.
Yeah, and Homeland Security. Didn't exist before.
I mean, literally, many tens of thousands of new government jobs appeared, and it became more intrusive.
It's very easy to point and say there's an external threat involved, and it's true. The Soviet Union was there, but it was there before Reagan, and terrorism was there before 9/11. The Republicans have the political clout to increase the size of government by standing against increasing the size of the government. And if you think about Bill Clinton, he signed NAFTA.
Yeah,
he signed
free trade.
Free trade, which is as anti-union as you can get.
Yeah.
So what we tend to have with all the publicity going in the opposite direction, current administration, and you look at it how you would look at it historically,
right?
You'll see the opposite of what the media is saying.
And a given president tends to move the nation in the opposite direction that it appears. In other words, a Democrat. Okay, a Democrat tends to move the nation to the right.
If you look at the surplus that we had,
tends to move it to the left.
We had a surplus during Bill Clinton. We had free trade agreements being signed at an absolute record rate, far more than any other president in my lifetime has signed. We had, if you look at the platform of the capitalistic right wing, not the Tea Partiers, the capitalists.
Right.
You see that Clinton pushed that far further ahead than any Republican has. And if you look at the big government socialization of large portions of our country, Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush did more of that.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at a little bit of history, in my lifetime, arguably the most right-wing president we had was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was the guy who dropped recognition for a capitalist China and recognized a communist country as being the sole legitimate government of China. And that's just one example.
Well, if you think a Democrat in the same situation would not have had the clout to do it. They would not have been able to do it.
And that's just the truth across the board. Presidents tend to do the opposite of what they get elected to do.
They have the ability to do it.
Right. We should elect Jerry Brown. By the way, for example, in California, we had a Republican governor. The deficit got out of control. The social systems got out of control. They elected Jerry Brown.
The guy that got recalled.
Governor Moonbeam.
Regurgitated, wasn't he?
What's that?
Regurgitated. I thought he was a has-been.
They elected Governor Moonbeam, and guess what? A lot of people are unaware of this. The California budget is not only balanced now, they're running a surplus without a tax increase. He's the guy who pushed it through.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Shouldn't a president who abuses the Department of the Interior, if you abuse a privilege, shouldn't he be taken away? Shouldn't they take away that privilege?
Have you stopped beating your wife yet?
No.
Okay. I'm
not married.
That's a trick question.
You're asking an interesting question that
starts with an assumption.
When the Congress loses
his privilege when he abuses it. He abused Department of Interior.
No, he didn't.
There's no question.
No, he didn't.
Well, we're speaking in absolutes here. He did or he didn't.
Congress passes a law to defund all vital activities. Congress also passed a law, and I'll use this as an example, that said the World War II Memorial cannot be open unless there is a national park, several national park people there to protect it. So if Congress passes or fails to pass a law funding the employees who are there by law passed by Congress to protect the World War II Memorial from being defaced, okay. it must be closed.
They fall back to hit that the head of the American public right square in the eye.
No. Well,
that's what government shutdowns are all about. That's exactly what they're about.
Something's got to close. It's not vital to get into the national parks.
This goes back to the root of the whole issue. Whose fault is it that the parks were shut? Whose fault is it that the government was shut, that the World War II memorials were shut? And that depends very much on your personal opinion.
Yeah, and the issue is...
Because there's no way... I cannot point a finger and say Obama did this. I can't point a finger and say Boehner did this. I can't say Reed did this.
Right.
All three of them did this. Because they're all involved. I mean, it's who caused the BART strike? Well, the union did. But did the union really cause the strike, or did the negotiations with the management cause the strike? I don't like strikes. That's my opinion. It comes back to I don't care whose fault it is.
Personal problem. But, you know, let's talk about this interior thing just a moment. Congress passes laws. And the laws, when they're enforced, have consequences. And the people who often turn around and blame, if they're a Democrat, there's a Republican president,
right?
They will blame the Republican president for enforcing the law that the Democrat voted to pass.
This is
another reversal here. The Congress of the United States, specifically the law was introduced by the Republicans, by the way,
right,
and pushed by the Republicans, that you must have guards at the World War II Memorial.
To prevent vandalism
to the memorial. I mean, they passed a law. They authorized the positions.
For good reason. There were people spray painting.
When they turn around and say you can't have the people there because they're not vital, then under the law passed by Congress, signed by the president, George W. Bush, the thing has to be, they had to put, it can't be open. People are not allowed in there. On the other hand, there's another law. Let me get the other law. The other law is you can't keep people out of there if they want to hold a protest.
Right. So freedom of speech goes in. They're allowed to do that. Now, there's another side of this. People were upset because there were threats being made by the government to arrest people that checked their emails while on furlough from the government.
Arrest.
Hold them.
Actually, arrest them.
Arrest them because it's illegal. They were going to enforce this. They said, do not check your BlackBerry. Do not check your email. It was a big deal. This press made a big deal out about how the Obama administration is doing this. Well, this is part of a Republican-passed law that there were some lawsuits early on that said that, well, I was not on duty, but I was doing on-duty things, so you owe me money. So the Congress said, fine, well, it's illegal now. If you're not on duty, you can't be on duty. If we said you're on furlough, you're on furlough. So the Obama administration is enforcing it. And so people are saying, well, they're pushing it harder than they should. Well, possibly, maybe somebody could avoid recognizing that a law exists and needs to be enforced. Because both sides did that during the middle of this anyway. When, for instance, executive orders being passed to say this area needs to be open and Congress saying, well, this area needs to be paid. The reality is this whole system that we've gone through for the last, month now, was a dysfunction, not a function
actually,
of government.
Actually, it's more than a month. It started last year.
Right. It started last year. It's a dysfunction. So you can point at any portion of it and blame someone because every aspect of it has been dysfunction. And I'm people are saying, well, it sounds like you're not blaming. No, I'm blaming everyone. I think the Democrats are to blame. I think the Republicans are to blame. I think every elected official up there was to blame. We elect them to get things done. And when they use a gun to each other's head to get something done, and then the thing didn't get done in any direction. Nothing was accomplished except a prolonging of the event. Nobody won. People can say that the president won and the Republicans fell apart, but the president wanted to get some more things done. The Republicans wanted to get more things done. Democrats wouldn't. Nothing got done.
It really boils down to the fact that the spirit of compromise isn't there.
It's true.
If a Republican tries to actually get something done,
Democrat says no.
No. Let's take it a little further. If the Republican actually wants to work with a Democrat to get something done, which is necessary,
right? And once the Democrat does say yes,
one no. Then, for instance, if John Carter decided to work with the Democrats to get something done that would reduce the budget, for example,
right,
he's going to have to give up something on the other side.
And the Tea Party folks will say no.
In his district right here, somebody from the right will run against him and say that he's caved in to the left. And
we had a discussion about this. We've got to run some commercials. We had a discussion about this yesterday about John Carter is very much for border security. I very much support him on this. He's also for immigration reform. I also very much support him on this. He has a wife that is a naturalized U.S. citizen. She didn't begin as a U.S. citizen, and he recognizes the process is very long and very cumbersome. It takes a massive amount of work, and we have a demand that's for more people than we're able to take. Now, he's very much for border security. Well, he voted for this immigration reform. And in the process, a lot of people in this district got very upset with him. They said, oh, he's opening the borders or whatever, when totally not. In the middle of this debate here, he voted against the 35-page bill that basically funded the government through February and extended the debt ceiling. He voted against that because if he voted for it, he would be voting for that and for immigration reform. So somebody to the right of John Carter, who I think is pretty far to the right already, is going to run and say he's not a real conservative. Anytime the conservatives are attacking the conservatives more than the liberals are, there's a problem. Anytime the liberals are attacking the liberals more than the conservatives are, there's a problem. It means disarray. It's very easy to point at the Republicans in the middle of this and say they're the ones that came out of it worse. Anyway, we got to play commercials. Sorry.
Divorce attorney Ed Laughlin.
Is your marriage on the rocks? Have you been wanting to get a divorce?
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And maybe we will get off of the mini eight-legged arachnids.
Politics.
The politics.
Yes. Well, there's some good news to report in the marketplace.
Really?
Yeah.
The health marketplace?
No, the actual marketplace. The marketplace for stocks and bonds and for the economy. And we don't really know a lot of data that we have on the economy. But when we look at specific companies, we do have data on that.
Mm-hmm.
The S&P 500 hit a record this week. A record high, not a record low, thankfully. The Dow Jones is up. The NASDAQ was up. I mean, these are pretty significant movements forward. And I think kind of more importantly, in the middle of the government shutdown, we didn't see the volatility that we've seen in the past when we've talked about the debt ceiling or about default on the government debt or any of the other things, because I think most people don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, the S&P 500 is up 2.4% this week, which is quite a fascinating jump. Barron's has a series of economists that they put together and have them discuss and say, what do you think the market's going to do? Economists who work for major investment firms. And basically, their consensus, if you take it all together, is that the market will be up about 7.5% between now and June next year. Which is, again, that's economists and everything else.
They can all come to an agreement and it'd still be completely wrong. But that's the sentiment among economists.
And I tend to, sometimes I look at them and said, "What are these guys talking about?" In this particular case, it's a little scary to me.
That you agree with them?
That I agree with them. Between now and the end of the year, there's a lot of people who see room for the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500 to go up. And we look at it from a little different point of view. We run a, well, not, of course, it's risen, so our data is a little out of date right now. I would guess that we're running around a forward price-to-earnings ratio now of about 13. The long-term average is 17, which means that we're still in a slightly undervalued market.
We still could use another 30% rise to get to a historical normal valuation.
But, you know, the issue is that until the government fiscal conflict is resolved for a longer term period,
we're going to see
depressed spending both on the personal level and on the corporate level. And that's going to slow the economy down. It's going to slow earnings growth down. That's one of the, wherever you are on the political scale, it makes no difference. There's a reality here. When anyone decides to threaten to cut off government spending, an awful lot of companies in the United States really do rely on, to some degree, within their business, on things that they sell to the government or they do for the government, or Small Business Administration loans, retirement. And when we say that, for example, you would think that a small business that operates in the Killeen area, for example, and has absolutely no government funding and no government contracts, and I'm just using this as an example, or even in Temple, would say, you know, I am a small business. The government has nothing to do with me. The government shuts down, it's no big thing.
Their customer base is based on that.
But there's, you know, this happens to be the part of the country where per capita we receive more federal government dollars than anywhere else other than Washington, D.C. And as a result of that, it's going to have an impact. It has an impact all the way across the board because people on Social Security who have that as a significant portion of their income, anything, well, even people who it's not significant, but it comes in, have a little nagging fear in the back of their minds all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That they might not get their check.
Anytime that happens, they spend less.
They're going to slow their spending down. They're going to increase their savings.
They say, well, this is right before Christmas. Maybe I won't spend as much as I thought I was going to on my grandkids. I think I'll just keep a little bit extra.
So, a single-digit rise in the markets between now and next June is a very, very easily understood and I think probably correct assumption. Not that the economy isn't capable of producing a much bigger rise in the market and a much bigger rise in itself.
If we look at the fundamentals outside of the government, if we look at the way the economy has been growing, the growth has been in the private sector. There's no doubt about that. We've had shrinkage in the government sector. Well, we just had a lot more shrinkage in the government sector, and that affects the private sector, even if we are putting all of our growth there. That's where we are moving forward. When you have something like this, it affects everybody. I mean, if you're a computer salesman and you're selling computers to government employees, they're not going to be buying right now because they don't know if Congress is going to pass a law to say they get back pay or not. They don't know this stuff. We don't know this stuff. Nobody knows. Congress doesn't know. Anyway, we're almost out of time for this hour.
Yeah, we are. So the market remains undervalued if you're a long-term investor. But it's not going to get to fair market value in all likelihood
until this
fiscal
uncertainty
brouhaha is resolved, and I unfortunately think I know how it's going to be resolved, and I'm not going to like it, but that's beside the point.
Well, when was the last time you really liked something that came out of D.C.?
When Ronald Reagan was president. And that was probably, you know, I probably was less aware of what was really going on at the time.
Right.
But still,
anytime you get any scrutiny on what's going on in D.C., it's really hard to like it.
Yeah, it's like the making of sausages. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we do do things during the week as well. And if you would like to contact us off the air, we have, during the weekend, of course, we're going to have, we have voicemail, but you're welcome to give us a call or email us and give us any recommendations about what you'd like to hear or talk to us. And the telephone number is there, and you can leave a voicemail message, 947-1111, or
you can reach it toll-free. Again, voicemail, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can also go to our webpage, tpwc.com. It's also thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And we've got podcasts available there for your continued listening lunacy. So until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military.